Welcome to the IAM Radio Network, featuring a choice coaching show offering skilled life coaching services from youth to adult. And now, here's the relationship whisperer herself and your host, Katie Garmazon. Get ready to go. Interactive. Well, good afternoon, world. I am Jeffrey Miller, the founder and also the producer of Katie's show today, and I'm going to introduce her in just a minute. I want to welcome you all to the debut show of Choice Coaching, the Relationship Whisperer herself, Katie Garmazon. And this is going to be a phenomenal show, and I say phenomenal because it's going to be impactful. There's going to be a lot of information that you're going to receive from Katie in this show today. We're going to talk to her about her life, how she became a coach, and go on from there. And she also has a special guest in studio today, which we're going to be very, very proud to introduce, and very pleased, I should say, as well. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Coach Katie Garmazon to her show. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be on my first radio show.
It's got to be exhilarating, exciting, and all that stuff with the exclamation points, I think. I remember the day well myself, and I don't have long nails as a guy, but I think I didn't have any by the time the show started, you know. It was quite fun and interesting. And I can only imagine. It is, not everybody's a natural for jumping on radio or jumping on a stage and talking to people. But in retrospect, it's a natural part of our life to communicate. And
absolutely.
I know working with you as a coach, coach to coach, you can communicate. So this will be a great show. There's no question. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of information, people getting to know who you are, your backstory, so to speak. Typically, people want to know that because they want to be able to know you, like you, and trust you as a coach. And when they feel that you've been through the stuff, you've been in the trenches, so to speak, and they have similar issues in life, that they'll be able to relate to you as a coach, and you'll be that go-to person that they'll be able to feel a level of comfort with to talk to. So let's get started. I mean, let's start to tell the world, who are you, and about where you grew up and early childhood, et cetera.
Okay. You still there, Jeffrey?
Yes, I am. Go ahead, Katie.
Okay. Well, I guess I could start by telling everybody that I grew up in a small town called Manitowaj. It's a mining town that's up north in Ontario. And I lived there with my family till I was about 13. And then at that point, I guess the mines were closing. And so we packed up and we moved to Sudbury.
All right.
Yeah.
And at what age were you at that point? You're still quite young.
When we moved away from Manitowaj?
Yes.
I was about 13, just
about
turning
13. About
13,
right. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, you did say that. Okay. Now, as far as being a coach, we all have our wants and desires as to why we became coaches. I say wants and desires because there's something that kind of overtakes us and we don't even realize it's happening. Coaching is, a lot of people are coaching as sports. Okay, you got to have a sports coach. In this case, we're talking about life. And a lot of people refer to it as life coaching, and they think it takes the place of psychology, so to speak, or those that have you come in and sit on the couch. And I'm not kicking the mainstream psychology because it has got its worth. It is very, very good. More than more people need it, and probably there's more that probably should go and see a good psychologist. And I'm not trying to say there's something wrong. Technically, it's because there's something right, and you want to make sure it's like a maintenance program. Coaching gives people a better alternative, actually. And why we become coaches, the why, the W-H-Y, is really, really different for everybody. But ultimately, it comes to that back to that same thing. I became a coach because. And a lot of it has to do with early childhood. Where would you feel you fit into that? Do you think that's something to do with why you became a great coach?
I think it's one of the reasons I chose youth as one of my coaching specialties. And It's because, well, I grew up in an abusive environment. So I grew up living in fear of my home, not wanting to be there, praying before I went to bed that, you know, the abuse would stop, that the pain would stop, that I would no longer have to live in fear. So as a child of abuse, I feel like I have a lot to offer youth, troubled teens. You know, I mean, I was homeless at 16, so I lived on the streets for about a year and a half, just over a year, and living up, being homeless is a very hard thing to do. Even when you're 16, when you're 20, when you're 30, when you're 40, and it's not something people really want to do. So those experiences in my childhood, they taught me a lot about life, a lot about adaptability. Growing up in an abusive home, I learned to read people at a very young age. I learned to know cues, facial expressions, body language, you know. So I would know if I needed to get out, go out and play with my friends, or if I was safe to stay home.
Early childhood and the problems and issues that we have, and something that, you know, when you're born, you never expect. You don't know what you don't know is really what it comes down to. And we all have issues, and everybody's are different, but it's amazing how it leads to your life.
Well, and it's funny that you say you don't know when it's something you're born into, because until I was 15, I wasn't entirely sure that what was happening to me was abuse, because it was such a natural and normal part of my life.
Exactly. And more people are starting to realize that as they go through adolescence and come into a early adult life, like, you know, wow, when they look around the rest of the world, when they go off to school or whatever and go, is this normal or am I normal? And then they realize and they understand that what they went through is typically, unfortunately, more the norm in a lot of families with the way the environment's going, the way people are with the economy, but it's not right. There's a lot of stuff going on out there that is not right in households.
It's true. And the funny thing is anybody who's grown up in an abusive environment will know what I'm saying when I say that an abuser wears two faces. They have the face that we as their children or as their family see in the home behind closed doors. And then they have the face that they wear in front of the public, you know, and that face is always happy and caring and joking. And so it's funny that when the abuse comes to light, when the second mask is ripped off, people are dumbfounded and they have a really hard time believing that this was happening under their noses all this time.
Isn't that amazing? It is true.
It's
very sad when I think about it. And I say amazing because it's amazing that more isn't being done to help. I guess that's what it is. But behind closed doors, a lot of people don't realize what's going on from home to home across the world. And, you know, this led to you actually becoming homeless. And you mentioned earlier about homelessness, that nobody really wants to be. And
no.
It's true. It's a true fact. I'm sure there's a percentage maybe that have said, hey, I'm homeless, I like it, I'm going to stay a hermit or whatever. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the person that wants to go and live off grid and hide out in the woods and let society go down the wayside. This is, here you are, a very young lady in an early part of her life. What, 15 years old you were about? 15?
16.
16 years old, having to hit the bricks, as they say, and make it a go of it with no place to be, no place to go. What was that like? How did that feel?
It was terrifying, and it was lonely. I don't know. I did what I had to do, right? I mean, you do what you have to do to survive. I ate out of garbage. I panhandled for money to... I remember the mall here in Sudbury. One thing I remember is if I could panhandle $5, then I could go to the food court in the mall downtown Sudbury, and New York Fries would give us one of the trays that people carry their food on, and they would fill it with fries for us for $5. And so my goal was always to get that $5 so that I could have, you know, a plate of fries instead of having to go dig through a dumpster to find my meal that day. In the wintertime, it's horrible. It's horrible in the wintertime because you honestly, you like sleeping on the street, like on the side of the road, you don't know if you're going to freeze to death overnight. Sometimes I would get lucky and someone would let me in between the doors of a business, you know, like the TD Bank. Someone would be going in with their card and they would let me and my friends, I had a friend or two, come in between the doors with me, and we would, cause they have heat blowers, right? So we would just sleep there for the night. And we were lucky those nights because we got to keep warm.
So it's like sleeping between behind a glass wall, so to speak, and then you never knew when somebody else might walk in with their card, and you'd be in there potentially sleeping where they're going to come in to get their cash out of the machine.
Yeah, there was one time where someone had let us in and we were sleeping, and then I guess someone else had come in and they were upset that we were sleeping between the doors, telling
right.
us that we weren't allowed to be in there. They wanted us to get out. Now, obviously, we didn't get out. We didn't leave. But I mean, that happens. People see you sleeping there, and I don't know what it is that upsets them, the fact that you're where you're not supposed to be, or they've just been faced with the homeless problem. I don't know. A lot of people, when they would walk by us when we were sitting on the street, they would just kind of look up or look away in the opposite direction. And I always used to say, you know, because I always felt like I was just another of life's big problems that no one wanted to see. Like I was invisible.
Wow, that's what a way for a young lady to have to feel. And you say we, so you evidently were able to connect with some other people who were homeless as well.
Yeah.
So at least you got somewhat of a friendship, so to speak, with somebody that could have your back.
We were kind of a family.
Yeah.
Yeah, we looked out for each other. We took care of each other.
I mean, not ever being there, I can't say I can imagine what it would be like, because I cannot. I'm not going to even go to the thought about I can imagine it. I guess everybody could think what it might be like, but you're never going to know unless you've been there. And with the economy going on in the world today, a lot of people have become homeless as a result of losing their work, you know, losing employment, et cetera. But this is different. Here we are, folks, and for the world to be listening, you've got a young lady that had to leave her home. Because she wasn't safe. It wasn't a safe environment for her to live in, and her only choice was just to get away from it. It was her survival button, and she had to push that button and go to the unknown, wherein if you think of your own children, you'd wish that you'd never have to see this happen. 99%, I mean, parents just don't typically want this to happen.
And that's very true, because I have kids now, and I keep begging my daughter to go to a college or university close so that she can live with me till she's 30. I don't ever want her to leave. And I have done what couldn't be done for me and created a very safe and happy environment for my kids to grow up. So in saying that, I broke the cycle.
Wow. Yeah, I say wow because it's just a mind-boggling thought to think of you at 16 years of age, any child out there 16 years of age having to deal with the streets and all that goes on. And tell me about the city, the area you were in that you were homeless. I mean, it must have been very scary.
It was scary. Well, it's actually the city I still currently live in. I live just on the outskirts of it now. It's Sudbury, Ontario, and I like it. It's a great city. It feels like home. But the thing is, though, is it's not just, there aren't just homeless teens in Sudbury. There are homeless teens everywhere. And I don't really think anybody has a solution to the problem, so to say. It happens for many reasons to kids who are taken away by the Children's Aid Society, and they grow up in foster care, and then they get to a point where they don't feel safe in, let's say, their foster home. So then they take to the streets, they run away from their foster home, and then they end up homeless. And there's no reason for it. They're like, I don't know. I have yet to figure out how to solve this problem, but it's something that I do think about often, and it is something that I'm working on.
Well, I applaud you on that, Katie. I don't believe it's a problem that any one person can tackle alone. The difference is, if one person wants to do something about it, then many others should join in. You know, so each person multiplied by people, by people, by people, will come to a conclusion someday where this can be, you know, they can be ratified, it can be stopped. In other words, it's got to change. I think that's what it is, the environment, which means we all need coaching, folks. I'm not going to apologize to say that. I need coaching, and I'm considered a master coach. And I still need coaching. I have coaches.
And
I highly
I
recommend, We all do. We all do. Yeah. And people think they can just talk to a friend, and God bless our friends, because yes, they have been a survival button for me my whole life to have great friends. But in a lot of instances, the friends don't necessarily have the answers or the tools in the toolbox, as we call it, to help with the that I might be going through, the perplexing situation that you might be going through, or anybody else listening today. You know, we've all got that little thing that happens sometime in our life, and it could be multiples. Sometimes they snowball and domino, as they say, the domino effect. They pile up one on top of the other. Coaching today is becoming more of a mainstay than not, and that's one of the reasons Katie is a coach. It's one of the reasons I am a coach, because we have been there in our lives. My backstory is nothing like yours, Katie, but I have one just the same as everybody listening to this show. Everybody on this planet has a backstory. You've had a growing up. You had an early adult, a childhood. You learned to walk, talk, etc. And everybody has something that's gone on that's made a difference in their life that's necessarily sometimes upset the apple cart of the mind. And it's kind of a funny way to say it, but think about it. So, Katie, yeah. this is great stuff to have people understand who you are, the know you, the like you, and the trust you, so that they can utilize your coaching services. So when did you start on your path to coaching? Some people say I always have been, which is quite true. But when did you realize and recognize that you wanted to be that coach that you are today?
See, it's funny, though, because I always say, too, that coaching is a personality. So I was 25, and I realized that I was still blaming the people from my past for everything that was wrong in my life, and I was unhappy. And so I knew that I had to take responsibility for myself and the choices I was making. And I realized, I knew at that point that my life was my own and that I needed to take back my power. So basically, you know, everything that was wrong in my life then was no longer the fault of the people in my past. It was my own fault, because I am an adult and I am making my own choices now. So I had to take responsibility for that. And what I did to start that was I made the choice not to be a victim anymore. I made the choice, the conscious decision, to be a survivor and to recognize that I was a survivor. I wasn't a victim anymore. So then I decided to examine myself, which was really interesting. So I sat down and I verbally picked myself apart. I made one pile of things that I loved about myself and then another pile of things that I did not love about myself. And when I was done, I was actually surprised to see that the pile of things that I loved about myself was substantially smaller than the pile of things that I didn't love about myself. So I picked up I physically picked up the pile of things that I loved about myself, and I started putting them back. And then I mentally envisioned a bunch of holes that were left, where the things that I didn't like about myself were gone. And I made the choice to start filling those holes with more and more things that I could love about myself, so that I could become someone that I could be proud of, someone that I could love, you know, work on my self-esteem. And I obtained my coaching certification. And it's funny, because a lot of the things that I did to fill those holes have become tools that I now use today in my coaching process.
Wow. I'll use the word epic in proportion, because that is a lot of stuff. Folks, I hope you got that list. And if you wrote it down, you need to get a hold of Coach Katie with this, because I tell you what, how many people can honestly say on their own, of their own fruition, they've been able to do that and do the, what we call the dissection of the mind, to get into the unconscious, subconscious mind about, and say, this is just, don't want to look at it and say, these are the things I don't about me. These are the things that are going on in my life I just don't accept. I don't want to live this way. And then take all the good as well, the pros and the cons, or the plus and the negative, however you want to say it, and write it down and make a list and look at it and focus on it and say, wow, now I'm going to mentally pick the good things up that I am and what is great about me, and I'm going to put them back, and I'm going to hold on to them and cherish them, and I'm going to take that list that I don't like about myself, and I'm going to take each item line by line by line by line, item by item by item, and I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to make that change. I applaud you. That's fantastic that you've been able to do that.
You.
And this is the reason now, after these years of coaching, you are known as that coach, that super coach.
Yeah.
That's able
I've been
to help.
I've been accused of offering a more aggressive form of coaching. And basically, I get invested in my clients and their success. So I just, when they come in and they set out their goals, and I ask them to set out the most unrealistic goals they can think of, because I'm going to make those a reality. I'm going to teach them how to make those a reality. And so when they come in and they invest in me financially, I invest in them with everything I have. And I'm going to do everything that I can to teach them how to get where they want to be. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Your failures are my failures, and I don't like to fail.
Fantastic. What a way to put it. And and now here you are, the CEO of Choice Coaching Canada, a company you've started, and you've been very successful as a coach. You've got many clients out there, folks that have been with you as a coach and have been in the trenches, so to speak, with you, because it sounds to me like you jump in the trench with them.
I do. You
give them a hand and say, listen, this is what I'm going to, these are the tools I have, and this is what we're going to do, and I'm not putting up with any BS. And BS is BS as far as what the bull does, but it's also belief system, because you're going to change their belief system. The BS being
because I did it, and so I know that it's possible, and that's what it comes down to. I have done it; it is possible, and now I'm going to show you how to do it. It's as easy as that.
That is exactly what folks need to hear, Katie. That's why you are the coach of coaches, and that is why when you put in to be a partner with the IM Network, the Interactive Media Network, you were looked at as our highest level of coaching, which is the Platinum Partnership level, and you qualified for that level. And hats off to you, because you've got the years of experience, but you don't have as many years as some coaches do, but you have it because you have it from life. And that's what life coaching is all about. And that's absolutely fantastic. And now you have, as a result of that, as I said, many, many clients that can say, yes, Katie's my coach. She kicked my butt. She didn't put up with my BS, and she helped me get through it. And I believe you have one of your clients with you today, Dawn, if I'm not mistaken. And I'd like you to – I'm going to pass your show right over to you until we have a break. And Dawn, welcome to the show. I'll be very happy to sit back and relax and hear the rest of the show myself. And Katie, thank you very much for being a Platinum Partner with the IM Network. We're proud to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And now, folks, on with Katie's show.
Okay, so Dawn and I first met a year ago when I was taking the driving course here in Sudbury. He had come into the class to share his a tragic story. And he shares this story with the driving students because he's hoping to warn people about, warn people about the consequences, I guess, of distracted driving. And that's what his story is about today. It's about distracted driving. When I first met Dawn, he was suffering from survivor's guilt and a little bit of PTSD. So I offered him my card and I told him that I could help him take his power back. And then about 2 weeks later, he became a client and we began the coaching journey. So I'm going to turn it over to you now, Dawn, so you can tell us your story. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Story starts May 2001. I had just gotten up and I was getting ready for work. And I was just heading to work. And the unfaithful day, I ended up getting into a very bad accident. I was told I was not supposed to survive. And there was another vehicle involved in process. On impact, I ended up losing consciousness. And I regained consciousness, must have been a minute or two after, and I noticed that there was something wrong. I could see smoke coming up from behind the dashboard, and I was trying to focus to get my bearings, and then I realized, okay, I have to do something. So I started crawling out of the vehicle. I ended up getting help coming out of the vehicle, and that's when I noticed I had some injuries. I did not know how severe it was, how severe my injuries were, but they pulled me out of the vehicle. They sat me on the shoulder of the road, total chaos and confusion. I did not know what really was going on, and they turned around and they put me on a gurney and put me in an ambulance and rushed me back to the hospital. I was in emergency, and they were working on me. There was chaos there, and I was in and out of consciousness for seemed hours. I did not know the injuries, how severe they were, until 8 or 9 or even 10 days later. I was in intensive care for approximately 6 to 7 days. And they had told my family they didn't think I was going to survive that.
How did that affect your family?
It affected them very hard. I mean, emotionally, especially the emotional part. It's hard to lose any family members or
Absolutely.
Any close friends. But in a situation like this, it's worse. I found out after the type of injuries that I had, I was surprised of the injuries. That day, I ended up crushing my right foot and tearing ligaments and tendons of the right foot and crushing my heel. Broke my tibia and fibula on the right side. I ended up fracturing my left hip. I ended up with bruised ribs, busted ribs, a collapsed lung. I had hurt my shoulder, my neck, my back in the process. I ended up with a scar underneath the chin.
What caused that?
I found out after it was from the steering wheel that hit me in the chest and underneath the chin and ripped me inside the mouth too. People are telling me that the airbag saved my life. But that day, that make and year of vehicle that I was driving did not have an airbag.
Okay.
I was the airbag. They're estimating the speed that my vehicle and the other person's vehicle were doing together about 170 kilometers an hour.
Okay. So that would be about 85 kilometers each.
You're right.
Okay. So now let's talk about the passengers in the other car.
I found out that there was two people in the other vehicle. And at first I thought it was just a driver. But I found out after the fact that the driver was a young mother and the passenger was her 9-month-old child.
Wow.
And both of them were deceased at the scene.
How did hearing that, how did that make you feel?
It's very hard to explain. It affected me emotionally. It affected me physically, and I still deal with it to this day, going on 15 years. And I go through the pain every day of what my body's been through. I'm still recovering from the injuries. I haven't worked since the accident.
Okay.
I've had surgeries since the accident. I've had another couple of surgeries in Hartford. And I'm expecting more. I don't know when my body's going to tell me. Or
what are these surgeries for?
The surgery is, that I will probably be getting is a hip replacement.
Okay.
And probably because of my ankle or my foot, I might end up with a foot fusion. Or, don't know, maybe an amputation. I don't know. So I've been dealing with this ever since, and it's hard to cope and deal with. The accident was caused by a distracted driver. They're saying that the other driver was distracted. We will never know what distracted her from crossing the center line. I ended up with, like Kate said, PTSD and survivor's guilt.
Okay.
And it's hard to deal with.
So what was your guilt over?
My guilt was because I survived my accident.
Just the fact that you lived and they didn't.
Yep, especially with the nine-month-old child.
Yeah, I can understand. So let's talk about your frame of mind when you and I first
met. I had a frame of mind.
Well, I like to think you did.
Okay. Well, when we first met, I was hesitant because I did not know where this was going to go. I went through psychologists and I had people help me to deal with the situation I've been through.
Yeah.
That I was going through, I should say. And listening to you talk and trying to convince me to sit down and listen to you, how you can help me.
1 hour was all I was asked for. It was 1 hour.
But I was hesitant on it.
Oh, I know.
I was, you could say, bucking the system.
Yep.
And it was, even the first session we did, I was still hesitant on it. But then during that session, you started telling me what you can do and how I can deal with this.
Yeah.
And the more I sat down and I started talking and you were listening and you were telling me to go from the negative to the positive. You told me to switch it right around.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Absolutely. It's a difficult thing to change, to turn your thinking upside down.
It is, because everybody's way of thinking is not that way. It's always the negative.
People tend to steer towards the negative. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
And what I went through was a lot of negative, because people do go through what I went through.
Yeah.
And they're blaming themselves because I'm the only one that walked away. Well, you could say walked away. So it's something that you have to cope with and deal with.
Okay, so let's, I want to bring up the day that I challenged your thinking.
That was not...
Well, because I both challenged you and held you accountable for your way of thinking.
I didn't like that.
No, I could tell you didn't.
No, it was hard to be challenged by a person like you.
Like me.
A person that knows, that understands.
Yeah.
What's going on in my mind, if I had one. And the little old you challenging me. it was hard. But then I realized that you were right.
Do you remember what I said?
No, I did not. All I did was, okay, I I was agreeing with everything you were saying because you were right and you knew how to deal with it.
Well, and basically what I did that day was I took your what right do I have to be alive, and I turned it into a what right do you have to waste your life.
Yeah.
Now, it took a little longer than just that, and there was a lot more said.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But that's basically what I did. And I took away your self-pity, your feeling of what right do I have to be alive? I shouldn't have my life right now. I should have died too. This isn't fair. Why did they die and I live?
Mm-hmm.
And I turned it into what right do you have not to live your life? You were given a second chance and they weren't. You have a story, a message that you can get out to the world. You have a purpose. People relate to someone who's been through the experience, who's been through the trauma. You have that story. Don't waste your life. Don't waste the story. Share it. Share it with the world. Work hard. Get a book out. You know, do live seminars. Talk to larger groups. Let people know that distracted driving is becoming an epidemic and it is ruining more than just the lives of the people in the accident. It affects the family, the people who witnessed the accident. There's so much more to this than people realize.
And you're right. It's getting worse from the time of my accident until now. Like you said, it's an epidemic. And I hate to say it, but it annoys me.
Okay.
It just affects me to a certain degree that if they'd let me do what I want to do.
We'd be having this conversation from a different location.
Yes, we would.
And I understand that. So let's talk about, you're driving down the street. Okay, let's talk about this a year ago before we met. You're driving down the street and somebody's tailgating, or you look over and somebody's texting on their phone while they're driving, you know, all the things that we do, adjusting the radio, looking back, yelling at their kids. You're seeing these things. What does that do to you a year ago?
It just frustrated me.
What was your reaction, though?
Oh, anger, disbelief that people are still doing that. They're from... Until now, you see it every day. People are texting and talking on phone without any disregard for whoever's going to be in front of them. You know, they're paying more attention to the conversation than what they're going. And I tell that to people and they say, well, I pay attention to where I'm going. No, you're not. You're paying more attention to the conversation. You're glued to that phone. And that's what frustrates me. People are glued to the phones now. And I don't know what people did before the cell phone came out. Well, I should know.
Well, no one would know that they're 5 minutes away from their house.
That's it. And that's one thing. It's like you can be in a restaurant having a bite to eat, and all of a sudden you look over and somebody's on their phone.
Yeah.
What? Where's the conversations at now? People can't communicate without their phones now.
People's lives are in their phones.
They are. It's getting worse. People live on their phones now. And they can't leave home without their phones. I'd love to be able to walk to people and just grab their phone for 24 hours. See how much hair pulling they would do before in 24 hours.
I'm sure it would be quite a bit.
It would be.
Yeah. Okay. So back then, like, let's talk about the overwhelming urge to follow people's phones.
Okay. There was an urge then, years ago. And I did scare a few people. But they didn't know my situation then.
No, they didn't. And when you would people doing these things, you would go to a place of rage.
Yes. My blood pressure would go up very much. I was like a bright stop sign. That's how red I would get.
Okay. I've seen that red.
You have.
It's only because I'm a good coach.
So. Okay. So, but it's just frustrating now. You know, the laws are there, but they're not enforcing them enough. It's like impaired driving, the same thing. They're not. The laws are there to be enforced, but they're not. It's like a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say impaired driving. I actually did just some research before the show, and I looked for the statistics on distracted driving and impaired driving and all the different types of accidents. There's rage driving, fast driving. Did you know that distracted driving is right up there, if not above, impaired driving for the most people killed every year?
I wouldn't be surprised about that, no. Because you hear about it every day. You read about it. You hear it on the news. You hear it on the radio. You read it in the papers. People are getting killed just because of the phone.
Yeah.
Or even reaching over to fiddle with the radio or grab a coffee out of the coffee holder.
Yeah.
It's still a distraction.
Yeah.
But the only thing that they're enforcing really is the phone.
Well, there's a new law that came out that states that you're not allowed to look back and argue with your children. You can't smoke a cigarette, you can't drink a coffee, and you can't fiddle with the radio or the heat settings while you're driving. So that's a new law that's come out. So they're trying to get people to stay focused on the road because you're basically driving a killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to keep yourself from killing people, the smart thing to do is to pay attention to the road that you're driving on.
Yep.
And the other drivers around you. But people, it's like they think if they're not drunk, they're fine. But if you're not looking at the road, if you're paying attention to anything else, you know how many times I've had to slam on my brakes and swerve off the road to avoid being hit by somebody who just crossed into my lane. So, I mean, it happens all the time. And you can be as defensive a driver as you want, but you can't always be the person who is able to stop and get out of the road.
You can be the safest driver around.
Yeah.
It's not you that's going to cause an accident, somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got into my accident, there was somebody being distracted. And I was just able to work that day.
Yeah, wrong place, and wrong time. Yeah.
That is it.
Yeah.
And I was beating myself up. If I would have left 5 minutes later, or 5 minutes sooner, or if. There was a lot of ifs in there.
Yeah, but we can't live our life on them, right?
No. I mean, it. And with Kate, with Katie, she helped me to get rid of the ifs and to do what I'm still a little bit, when I get behind the wheel, I still get frustrated, but not as severe as it was. I've mellowed out a lot.
And does that surprise you that you are able to be like that, to kind of brush it off as?
It's still hard to do. Because of the situation.
Yeah.
But it's helping me with my life now. I'm able to be more social with friends. I don't get upset as much because I did get upset every once in a while for sometimes mostly stupid things.
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while. It's been almost every day. But it's something that I've been dealing with. And I'm going to deal with it every day of my life until it's time for me to go.
Yeah.
And I know why I didn't say bye-bye, why I didn't go,
yeah.
I didn't die in the accidents, because of this. What I'm doing now is educating the new drivers and distracted drivers.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it every minute of it now.
I was just thinking that that you have a great story to tell, and that it's unfortunate that people don't understand this and they don't seem to get this. So is there anything that, if you could get every distracted driver here right now, and I mean they wouldn't fit in the recording, but if you could get them all here right now and look them in the eye and tell them one thing, what would that be?
What's more important, your phone or somebody's life.
Okay, so now you currently talk to driving students. These are younger people. What kind of reaction are you getting from them when you tell your story? Are you getting what you want? Do you feel like you're getting through to them, like your story is impacting them?
It's not just young people. There's older people involved in it. Some older people are taking the driving course in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s.
Okay.
What I'm trying to get across to them is to learn to pay attention when you're behind the wheel, because you're driving, how can I say this? You're driving a death trap.
Yeah.
And it only takes a split second to look over to your left or your right, or you know, just look in the rear view mirror behind you, and it's over with. It happens quick. And my accident happened in May, when there was no snow. The roads were dry. The sun was out. Why did it happen? Don't know. We'll never know.
Yeah. And that's got to be part of the struggle for you, not knowing.
It is. But I'm coping with it. Thanks to you. It's true. It's the way you explained it to me, I'm taking that face value.
Well, and let's be honest here, the homework was your favorite part of the coaching.
Yes, it was. I hated the homework.
We all know I love to give out lots of homework.
But what I went through with the psychologists, psychiatrists, they helped me to a certain point. But you made me see the opposite of what I was going through. So it's hard to fathom what you went through with your life and turning it around and trying to help me. I'm a little bit older than you, and you've helped me to go on with my life. You've changed my life.
Yeah, and it's about taking negatives and turning them into positives. I think that the best way to simplify, you know, what I do is because even mistakes, like I teach my clients to look at mistakes as a positive, as a surprise day, where they get to learn a bunch of new things. Now, unfortunately, in your case, in the case of this accident, none of the mistakes are yours. Yet somehow you ended up with survivor skills, and of course the PTSD, the rage and seeing other people do that we do when we're driving, checking our phones and whatnot. But as a coach, I like to turn negatives into positives, because like you said, people focus too much on the negative aspects of every situation, and there's always a silver lining, there's always a reason, there's always a why. There's always a why and then an answer for the why. So it's basically digging through the mess, the rubble, and finding the lessons, which I call the little blue light. And those lessons, the lessons or the meanings, they always carry their own weight. So instead of trying to carry the situation with you, which is the rubble, and weighing yourself down, I teach people to look for the lesson, for, you know, the reason, and carry that with them. And the more of those you find, the brighter your path gets. So.
Well, I appreciate what you have done with me mentally and emotionally and experience. Hopefully I forget.
Watch yourself there, Don.
No, this is an experience that I'll never forget. And I know that if I need help in the future, that you will be there for me.
Oh, and it truly was a great pleasure for me to have the opportunity to help you through what you were going through, to help you have overcome that last hurdle, because that's basically where you were at, you know, when you and I met. And I believe that everything happens for a reason, which you know. I don't believe that anything is by chance. Everything happens for a reason and as it's meant to be. So I believe that you and I were meant to meet when we did, and that I was meant to help you overcome that last hurdle.
Well, I'm going to tell our listeners that if you have any problems, these people are, to me, they're fantastic. They will pick your brain, trust me, with a toothpick or whatever dental instrument that they can use. But they will be picking at your brain, and they will take that and switch it around and help you with the positive part of it and help you go on with your life as much as you can.
Yeah.
And like I said, we've only met not even a year ago. And, boy, you talk about pain.
Yeah, well, they say I'm an aggressive coach, so.
Yes. There's grab eating, and then there's grab eating, and then there's two. So.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show today, Don.
I
really appreciate you telling your story to my listeners.
Thank you very much for having me. And hopefully we'll have to do the same.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So to all my listeners right now, if you are interested in working with me or any of my employees at Choice Coaching Canada, today for listening, I'm going to offer a free 30-minute session. So if you want to get in touch with us through my website at Choice Coaching Canada, www.choicecoachingcanada.com, you can message us through there and let us know if you're interested in working with us as coaches. And I want to thank you very much for listening today.
Excellent show, Katie, Don, Jeff here again, and a little bit of a close interjection. I'll tell you what, this has been a phenomenal show. First show, folks, congratulations, Katie and Don. Compelling story for those that choose to text and drive, use their phones, turn around, talk to kids, anything that is going to take your eyes off the road. We do see it all the time worldwide. So God bless you that you've been able to get through it and flip the state, as we say, flip the switch. And Katie, congratulations as a coach that you were able to help Don recognize and realize that. Absolutely fantastic, both of you. So
thank you.
Very, very good. Very good. Very good. Hope to talk with you again in the future, Don. And can, you know, it's fantastic you're working with the kids. That's a great place to start. If we can teach them in the driving ed school, if they can make it part of the law that they realize they cannot text or talk and drive, young drivers especially, but you know, us older folks are everybody is guilty because we do it. And I have even caught myself, and luckily I don't to a 99.999% degree, but that you just changed that, Don. I'm going to be 100% phone down, forget it. It doesn't exist while I'm behind the wheel. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Oh, fantastic. Katie, again, to be able to take that and flip that circumstance where, Dawn, you went through so many years working with professionals and still feeling that guilt, still living it and feeling that rage well up inside you that, you know, that two lives were lost through no fault of yours other than the fact that you were in that place at that time.
Yeah.
Wow. Katie, yeah, that's phenomenal. You're able to flip that. Absolutely fantastic. So,
yeah,
folks,
it was
you've seen it. Yeah. I mean, folks, you've seen it. You've heard it. You've seen the people doing it is what I mean to say. You see them texting. It's just a perfect circumstance of what can happen in your life. As far as all the other things in your life, you've heard Katie's story as well, her truth that she lived. And it has made her the coach she is today. So I highly recommend you take her up on her offer. We at the Interactive Media Network, or as we call it, the IM Network for short, are very proud to have Katie on staff with us. She is one of our premier platinum level coaches. Therefore, she is on the steering committee of the network to help with other coaches as well, because we coaches, as we mentioned, need coaches as well. And being a coach, we're open to coaching. We're open to have that coach help us tweak those little things that are going on with us because we're human as well. As much as we help and guide others to overcome circumstances like decades on, we still need it as well. There's still things going on in our lives. Well, who is perfect? I haven't met anybody yet, so therefore we respect that coaching that's going on. It's available to you, and a lot of people are still unaware of it. They're running around with an understanding that doesn't exist. Honestly, they don't get it because they don't know about it. And that's just the way it is. So, Katie, fantastic show. Folks, we're down to 3 minutes left. Katie, any last comments for your listeners?
I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. And I want to tell people to take Don's story to heart. Listen to his words. Listen to what he said. He, unfortunately, was a victim of just distracted driving, and he's living proof that it can happen to you. So put your phones down, adjust your radios and your heat before you leave your driveway. Don't drink a coffee while you're driving. Don't smoke a cigarette. Don't turn and get into an argument with the kids. Keep both hands on the wheel. Keep your eyes on the road and make it home safe, and allow others to make it home safely to their families. Because when you make the choice to pick up a phone, to answer a text, to look back in the seat, when you make that choice, you're taking someone else's life into your hands as well, and you have no right to make that choice for them.
Great advice, Katie. Thank you for that. Folks, take that to heart. That is so much the truth. I would like to say thank you again for joining in with us today for the IM Network with Katie Grandmaison. It's left an impression on me. I hope it has on you too, because it's something everybody needs to learn. And Dawn, thank you again for being a valued guest with us on the show today.
And you're welcome.
I'd like to take just a quick moment before we close today's show, folks. If you are a coach, an author, or a speaker, and you would like to have a show, get in touch with us. We have plenty of opportunity for partners to join with us on the Interactive Media Network, the IM Network. And get in touch with myself, Jeffrey Miller, and we will set up a time to have a call on Skype and communicate and see where and what we can do for you to fit into our network. So we thank you all so very, very much for being here. On behalf of the IM Network.
Thank you all for listening.
And for Katie, and thanks, Katie, go right ahead and finish it up, your show. One more
minute. Yeah, I want to thank everyone for joining in. I want to thank everyone for listening. I hope that people are going to take something away from this show. And maybe Don and I will end up working together in the future to stop people from distracted driving, to create more awareness around this situation and get people to start respecting themselves and their lives. Because the second you think that this can't happen to me, you make yourself a victim. You put yourself in a position to become a victim of distracted driving. So don't do that to yourself. Have more respect for yourself than that. That's really all I can say. If the choice is yours, when you get behind the wheel of the car, you choose what kind of driver you want to be. Choose to be a good driver, not a distracted driver.
Great advice, Katie. Thanks, folks. We appreciate you being with us. Listen in. Another show coming up on Thursday. My show, my debut, The Hypnotic Interventionist with Jeffrey Miller and myself. And we got a lot more shows coming up in the future. We thank you all for being with us. Enjoy your day from the IM Network.